This is an AMI podcast.
Hey guys, welcome along to another episode of Double Tap. It is Wednesday. It's the 6th of March, 2024. Coming up today, new MacBook Airs and Humanware are here to tell us about updates to the Stream 3 and Mantis Q40.
You're listening to Double Tap, your daily accessible technology show. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Preece.
Hey, Sean Preece, how are you today?
Hey, Stephen Scott, I'm very well, thank you. How are you, sir?
You know, I gave up The Simpsons to come and do this. I was quite happily watching The Simpsons.
Well, you say watching, I would say lazing about the place, doing nothing.
Yeah, exactly. That's right, because I am, as you know, a hero.
A hero. Well, what you were actually doing is just waiting for me to turn up so we could start recording.
Yes.
But you know
what?
That's
right.
I've got responsibilities I need to discharge before I can do this, Stephen Scott. I had to take the dog out. I had to... Well, that was it, actually. Anyway, yeah, I'm well.
Okay. Glad I didn't ask. But no, glad everything is good.
It's Wednesday.
We're off to a fly. This is like four times we've restarted this show today. It's too loud. It's too quiet. I can't hear it. Oh, my ears.
You doing that funny voice at me, Stephen Scott? How dare you?
I was helping all morning. I gave up The Simpsons for this.
I'm not.
Season one.
Oh, wow. You're going back to the terrible drawings and the funny voices.
Do you know they were the best ones, though? They were the funniest episodes.
Oh, here he goes. Hello, Grandad. Yeah, back in my day, The Simpsons was better. Was it? No,
and do you know what
No.
What is it with music these days? What is it with kids and music? It's all terrible.
You can't understand what they're saying. It's all mumbling.
Yeah, but I don't mind the mumbling, right? Because, okay, look, that's just what kids do, right? Kids just... Don't put that there. That's all you get from kids, right? That's basically an interaction with children, right?
Ageist, yes.
Youngest. But, you know, it's when they take old songs, or as I call them, classics, and then they put their own spin on them. So a song starts and you go, oh, I love this song.
I know this
one. Oh, look, it's Dionne Warwick, Walk On By. And then someone basically just violates the song by just shouting obscenities all over it.
It's not. No.
Walk On By. Beep, 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 beep. It's just a...
That's in a car. That's not walking. But the point being, they make that classic their own. Each generation wants their own. And what's wrong with standing on the shoulders of giants, Stephen Scott? Look at me today.
Why? Well, Dionne Warwick's an age. I don't think you want to be standing on her shoulders. I think that would be very unfair.
Well, we couldn't stand on anyone's shoulders.
I think we'd crush anybody we stood on. Even the world's strongest human, I think we'd struggle with.
This is a terrible start to the show. We can only apologise, especially
Welcome to Double Tap, to
Mr. F, of course, because he did sit us down and say, we need... That's a bit quiet. We need to...
Stop it.
It's quiet, I'm telling you. We need to...
Well, hang on, right, we'll make it as loud as humanly possible then.
It's
how
not
about
very
that?
Loud. Feedback at doubletaponair.com. What's that like? Look, the point being...
I'm getting feedback in my ears.
Mr.
told us tinnitus.
To set out our store before we start here, to let people know what's coming up on the show.
I told people what's coming up. We're going to do Apple MacBooks. Do we care about that? Not really.
Let's stop right there. You don't care. We're getting into the show now. So, yes, Apple have dropped some new products, and you don't care. I say new in bunny ears, by the way, air quotes.
Bunny ears. Is that a new thing? Is that a kid's thing? I don't know what that means.
It's
I have
no
idea.
What the youth say on the streets.
Ah, you see, that's I've lost you. They brought out these MacBook Airs the other day, and I'm like, okay. I mean, we kind of knew this was coming. It was rumored. I mean, look, Apple don't even care. They didn't even hold an event. They just press released it. Oh, here you go. Here's some new MacBook Airs. And really, the only update is the processor. They've moved from the M2 to the M3, which is natural.
Wow.
That's going to happen anyway.
Yeah, so we get a speed bump. Yeah, yeah, which they do all the time. They do drop products into the App Store only release.
They're not new. I mean, it's the
Apple
same
store.
It's the same thing. The innards have been upgraded.
Yeah, but you love the MacBook Air. You love that. We all agree that the first design was absolutely amazing, and it's I would say got even better. It's a great design.
Well, so, here's the thing. So there's a lot of people mourning the loss of the wedge design. Yes, they're saying good morning to the wedge design, which was the classic MacBook Air. You know, it had that kind of razor-thin edge you know, that would kind of expand up as the device opened. And, you know, it was a really nice design. It was really well made, very thin,
back
very portable. Back in my day. That's going to be one of those shows today, I think.
If that hadn't changed, if we were still using the wedge design today, it would be, oh, well, it's boring. Never changes. You know, just those little, let's make it more iPhone-shaped, square it off a bit. It's just those little changes that may draw someone in.
I don't know, there was something up, and remember that MacBook they brought out? They didn't call it Air, they didn't call it Pro, it was just called MacBook.
MacBook, yeah.
And it was really, in fact, it was all the way thin, right? I think that was all the way thin versus the Air, which had that sort of wedge design to it.
Yeah.
And I like that, I must say. And it's funny, because when I see people say things like, oh, that's it gone, it's discontinued, and it is. I mean, as far as Apple are concerned, they've discontinued it. It'll be in the vintage bin,
yes,
probably by the end of the week.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, exactly. What was that again? It's all up there with the Power PCs, you know, and my old PowerBook. But no, I do like that old design. I did think it was probably one of the most friendliest laptops for us from a size point of view, because I think my favorite MacBook Air was always the 11-inch MacBook Air. That's the one I absolutely loved for size.
Yeah, it was beautiful. I mean, do you remember back in the day, netbooks? I used to love a netbook, tiny little thing. But
did you?
Yeah.
You mean style-wise? Because, I mean, they were the worst computers on Earth.
Yes, admittedly, they were very underpowered, mostly.
Underpowered? This thing couldn't run Internet Explorer. Right. I could build it on Windows, okay, to be fair.
If you're going to be aggressive about it, Stephen, I'm just not going to talk.
I'm always going to be aggressive about it. How are we going to have a show? This is never going to work.
You are absolutely right, which is why they died off, right? They just weren't powerful enough. But the form factor is what I'm talking about. The form factor was great. I really liked it. And it's kind of the same with the Air. It was just so portable, thin. Like I say, the wedge design made it seem even thinner. And the 11-inch model particularly was great.
Although,
perfect for us.
If you think about it, because I remember that machine in particular had such a thick bezel around the screen that I think if you actually measured it, it was probably like a 13-inch laptop in terms of size. It was an 11-inch screen, but you had such a big bezel going around the edges. It was probably near a 12 or 13-inch screen. So, you know, it wasn't that small in some ways. You know, but the smaller 13-inch MacBook Airs, obviously they don't have any bezel at all pretty much these days. So, you know, you get much more into
for your
the
money,
system.
For the
much more into the size.
It's very TARDIS technology, isn't it?
Yeah,
I can
exactly.
never quite understand how, you know. It's a 15-inch screen in a 13-inch... What? Pardon?
And look, you know, I'm kind of not kidding when I say I don't care about the M3 version, because it's just a processor upgrade. And yeah, some people are saying it's incredibly fast in comparison to even the M2s. But the stats are more about the M1, which of course is because people, if you're going to be upgrading from an M1... or any MacBook, frankly, it'll be an M1 or an Intel to this device. There's no one, I don't think, is going to be going out and buying an M3 MacBook Air who's got an M2 MacBook Air, like I do.
Stephen Scott.
No, I'm not going to buy one. I would not do it, not for this.
No, I totally
remember,
agree.
I bought the 15-inch one, which some people kind of raised eyebrows about. Why are you buying a 15-inch MacBook Air? But truthfully, side by side in the store, I put the M1, because I loved that M1 MacBook Air, the wedge design. I thought it was a really nice design.
Yes.
And I put that next to, because they were all lined up, right? So I put them all together next to each other in the store and just went through them with voiceover only and just listened to the speakers. And it's hard in a store because it's so noisy in there.
Yes.
But I was just trying to get a sense of the audio from them. And, you know, the 15-inch, or actually as it is now, the 16-inch MacBook Pro obviously has an incredible sound off it. It has amazing, I think it's 6 speakers in there now. It's an amazing speaker array. Really nice to listen to, even decent bass response, everything, right? It's perfect. You could, you wouldn't need speakers with this.
Mm. Okay.
14 inches good as well from the MacBook Pro, but the MacBook Air, and especially the M1, which was the wedge design one, didn't have great speakers in it because the speakers were actually not at the side where the keyboard is.
They
were
down above. Firing?
Yeah, no, they were at the back. Remember, they were at the back at the hinge, so they were kind of up.
Oh,
that's firing.
Right. Yeah.
So it wasn't great in terms of sound, so a little bit weak. Then I put it next to the 13-inch MacBook Air, the new model, which had M2 at the time, and I thought, yeah, okay, that's quite nice as well. The 15-inch, though, sounds amazing off it.
And
the speakers
weren't
in the grills.
How often do you use it without headphones?
Oh,
never.
All the time.
Never.
All the time. No, I do. I always use my MacBook Air without speakers or headphones. I'm in the house. Why would I plug it into anything?
So you don't annoy anyone else?
Who else is here? My wife works out during the day. Not works out. I mean, well, she does. I mean, she's very busy.
Outworking
is what I mean, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm
amazing
sure
having
Coco
you switch two words around how something can just totally change.
Okay. Fair point.
Thank God it was those two words.
I'm so used just to, as soon as I come in here, the headphones go straight on. I never use, I've got some nice bookshelf speakers in here. I just never use them. There's nothing quite like having those headphones if you're working with audio.
I think it depends what you're doing, right? If you're editing audio, like you probably are in that moment, you're probably wanting to hear, because I must admit, I do like hearing. There's such a difference because you just don't pick up on things.
Yes.
You can edit, unless you know for sure. Like if I was doing a voiceover in here and it was just my voice, I know what it's going to sound like because I know what this room is set up to sound like. So I know it's fine. So I could edit without headphones on. But if I'm editing with you or with anybody else, or not so much even with you, because your audio is the same all the way through
as
well. So
dare you?
Well, you know, you managed to get rid of that horrible whine.
Sorry. Pause. My accent.
You managed to get rid of that horrible whine by getting that vocaster. That made a heck of a difference because that setup you had before was dreadful. It was. It was utterly awful.
Well, you say that, and I kind of agree, yes. I must say, I'm getting used to this not having a mixer, not sitting on those faders all the time. I am getting used to it. It's, I'm going to say it. You were correct, Stephen Scott. Well done.
I am a hero. Thank you. Thank you.
Should we let it slip as well that we are together, as a couple, learning Reaper as well?
I know. Isn't that absolutely... Is it that one?
Breaking news.
And you late the other one. If I had, this would have happened. Mr. F. Yeah, he doesn't care.
No, he doesn't. I don't think anyone really cares. I just
no one cares,
say it.
No.
It was a nice experience. We're learning Reaper. We spent a day together.
Shared learning. Shared learning.
We were talking. We were trying things out. It was gorgeous. I felt very, very connected and close to you, Stephen Scott. It was glorious. Oof.
Well, it's all right. Well, the next class you can do on your own. But no, so what happened was Michael Babcock, our friend, he set up this thing to shill us out of money called Club Unmute, which is basically his way of monetizing content. Monetizing content!
How dare he make a living out of his talent and skills?
Imagine having skills that are worth money. I have no idea what that's like. So... You know, he's obviously got them, and he set up Club Unmute, which, by the way, is brilliant because it gives you a chance to get extra access to things like, for example, the Reaper training sessions he's doing. Now, he started them a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
And they're all available on demand. Do you know what? I've got to say, this guy is a smart guy. He's got it all sussed. And, you know, I think it's a smart thing to do. You know, I think it's about time. It feels like... I was talking to Hector Minto about Ability Summit earlier in the week, and he was talking about how technology and we as a community are kind of maturing into our technology, meaning that we're starting to use our tech for more than just turning it on, accessing a website, sending an email, sending a text. And I think it's about time that we in the community are, you know, starting to monetize the work we do, the skills we have, because why not? You know, I think
absolutely.
I don't know how you feel about this, but I think there's so much giveaway sometimes, and I hear companies say, "Oh, we don't want to charge blind people, or we don't want to ask blind people for money." And I get this, I totally get it, because look, the majority of blind people of working age are out of work, you know. So you know, we're not all rich people, but I think people need the choice. That's the point, right? So people who do want to upskill to do things, they should have the choice. And if it's something like this, which is learning a new audio editor, that's going to take a lot of time for that trainer to do. So I think that person should be recompensed. So yeah, I'm all for it. And funnily enough, it was funny because we had both said to Michael, "Oh, hey, listen, we'll take some of that audio from you know, the Reaper class. We'd love to hear that." And then he's like, "Oh yeah, that's part of the Club Unmute thing." And I'm like, "Oh, hang on. Is that a subscription thing?"
That was embarrassing. Yes.
Well, once I realized that, I'm like, "Oh, well, hang on. I'm going to pay for this because that's I'm not going to take it for free. Of course I'm going to pay for it. It's $3 a month.
$3 a month.
I spend more than that on one coffee."
Exactly right. Totally worth it. And, you know, he's answering questions in the session and he's just so good. He's so knowledgeable.
Oh, yes, he's a smart guy.
I got to say, it's very impressive.
I'm starting to see podcasters and people out there starting to monetize their content. And at first I wasn't so sure. I've always been a bit, and it's different for us, right? Because we're here on Accessible Media. It's a different thing for us. We're not we're not selling our product to you. We're essentially making a show for AMI, and they buy it in, and then we, you know, can make the show for you. So, you know, it means that you as a consumer don't have to pay for that content. You know, if Mr. F says Get Lost tomorrow, we're rolling our sleeves up in the subscriptions, I'll tell
Correct.
You. But yeah, well, you know, look, girls got to eat, right? So, you know.
And we eat.
We eat. That KFC does not come for free, despite how many times I keep mentioning it on the show. But
it's true, though. It does seem like we've, as a community, if you take that as the visually impaired community, or you take it as, you know, content creators, we have matured. We've evolved. Yeah. And I think people need to start putting value on what they create. Absolutely.
100% agree. Yeah. So we set out to try the Reaper course. And it's quite cool. So if you don't know Reaper, it is an audio editor. We've been using Audacity, which is the free one, for years now. I mean, I was using Adobe Audition beforehand, and you've probably heard the story of me sort of telling you the whole thing about making it accessible, you know, but not really accessible because you could only do the single track editing. Multi-track wasn't possible. Audacity is good, but I don't know. For me, some of the issues with Audacity, there's two main issues for me. One is the accessibility on the Mac side, which is getting worse as we go along. There are elements you just cannot get to. So, for example, if I'm changing the amplitude of audio, so if say something's too loud and I want to bring it down a bit, then I can't get into any edit box to change that. I can get to the edit box, but it doesn't tell me I'm in the edit box, doesn't tell me what the value of the edit box is.
It's a real
shame. So I've got no idea.
It used to be accessible across the board.
Yeah.
And it's such a shame that the Mac has been left behind when it comes to accessibility. Absolutely.
Strange, isn't it? When you think of, and I don't know if it's because of Reaper. I don't know if part of me feels, and it's not that, because Reaper is available on Windows as well. You can use it on Windows, you can use it on Mac, and you got to pay for Reaper. I mean, you get 60 days free to download it, and I don't think there are many limitations if you don't buy it, but I think
None.
The recommendation is you would.
Just a nag screen before you can actually use it for 5 seconds.
Yeah.
But that's absolutely fine.
But if you were starting out creating a show or creating a podcast or just even recording or editing some audio, then at least you can use that and it wouldn't cost you any money either.
I must say, I absolutely love Audacity. I think it's a fantastic project. I think it's fantastic software. And I'm noticing a lot of similarities between Reaper and Audacity, as into the workflow of doing an edit on audio. So it's a great place for me to start from as well. But it does seem to be being, I don't know, slightly left behind. And the other thing with moving to Reaper is it's used so much more in the mainstream. If you're looking to learn something that you can take into maybe employment, good luck finding a recording studio or a radio station or whatever it is, a production company that may be using Audacity. Chances of them using something like Reaper is far more improved.
And Adobe Audition. If you go into any newsroom, they'll be using Adobe Audition. But Reaper.
But inaccessible.
I think. Do you know, it's a bit like the whole JAWS and NVDA thing, I think. You know, a lot of employers don't like supporting something that's open source because they don't feel they can get behind it, which is a shame for NVDA, actually, because it's such a powerful and useful tool. And a lot of companies are starting to get around to that idea. But basically, open source software is generally not something companies love to get involved in. They prefer something with a support ticket system, with an ability to get updates. Obviously, they've got to think about security as well.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, that's why I think a lot of companies go for that kind of thing. In news or in podcast, I guess, Reaper and Adobe Audition. Those are two very popular. I mean, also there's others like Logic Pro, which is very accessible, Amadeus Pro. I haven't gone down that route because they seem very much to me anyway more for music. And Reaper seems to be the closest to, you know, Reaper can do anything. It can do video as well, which is kind of interesting. That's what's kind of drawing me to it.
Quite tempting as well. Yeah, absolutely. If you learn the editing for the audio, then, you know, you can transfer that across to editing video as well, which is very nice.
The other thing I'll say about Audacity is it crashes a lot on the Mac, and it's starting to do the same on the PC for you as well.
Yes, it is. I'm having real issues lately with projects just not opening.
I tell you what we're going to do. I think we should do a show one day because we get a lot of emails in from people saying, hey, look, I'd love to know more about your setup and what you actually use to make the show. We had a lovely email from our contributor recently, Zach Tidwell. Remember Zach? He was on the show last week. And we had a, or the week before, actually, I beg your pardon, and we had a, was it last week? I honestly last can't remember. It was last week. The days just fly by.
Or was it this week?
Or was it this week? I who knows? You know what? Check it out. It's on the podcast. Go check it out. But it was a great conversation with Zach, and he got in touch the other day with a really nice email saying, you know, your show, and this is his words, you know, your show is one of the most professional I've listened to with me on it. He said, he's obviously, because Zach's done a lot of interviews, a lot of podcasts, and he must be quite surprised when he's listened to us and thinks, wow, you know, this audio is actually pretty decent. How
That's
are they doing
nice.
This?
Very nice. That
was a lovely comment, yeah.
Yeah.
We do care about our audio. We do spend a lot of time in the background fiddling and trying to make it sound the best we can. Yeah. But I think we should maybe do a little show one day just dedicated to our setups and what we use, because there's lots of different tools we use, and some of them are accessible-ish.
Yes.
And I think sometimes you have to... You have to go with that sometimes. You've got to lean into that a little bit. So you know, not everything is going to be accessible. We do our best to work with the companies that are creating products that might be accessible-ish. But, you know, sometimes you got to think, okay, what's more important? I remember getting into a lot of trouble when I was at my last place when I suggested a playout system, which is the system that's used in radio stations to play all the music and the jingles and the adverts and all that. These computer systems that actually run all that. I got into a lot of trouble for suggesting we use a system that wasn't accessible. And the reason I chose that was because what was more important to me was the radio station remaining on air 24/7. I had to think about the longevity of the service rather than necessarily the accessibility of the system, because there wasn't anything else that was out there that was fully accessible, and the only option that seemed to be available wasn't that reliable. So you have
you
to sometimes
You are a
pick.
Monster! Unbelievable!
But that's real world, right? We can all live inside this fantasy land that everything must be accessible and we'll all just stamp our feet until it is.
Yes.
Or we can live in the real world and actually get things done and actually work with companies to say, look, okay, let's do this from the inside. Let's not scream and shout on the outside and bang doors, because, yeah, some people will listen, sometimes they won't. But, you know, advocacy can sometimes just be a very simple conversation. I've got an email coming up soon about that. And someone saying, you know, I don't like to be an advocate. Me, I don't like to be an advocate. I'm not an advocate. That's not what I'm here for. I'm not here to advocate for anyone. I'm not here to advocate for you or even for me. I'm just here to tell you what we do. I'm here to talk about our lives, our world and tech. But we all, to some degree, have a part to play in advocacy. And sometimes we don't even realize it. Even just by talking to someone. You know, you find, like, the other day I was in the taxi. And, you know, the similar situation where someone says something to you that feels a little bit ignorant about vision loss or whatever. Like, what happened to you is my favorite question. What happened to you?
What happened to you?
And you know, just by answering that question, but not being cheeky about it, just answering it, that helps that person understand a little bit more. And, you know, not making people feel like idiots is a nice thing, I think. That's how I like to live.
No,
I think you've got to not treat people as idiots.
Of course, it's not quite.
Because we all feel like idiots. We can't all know everything.
I know, but it's not quite as cut and dry, right? Because if someone's asking you, how did you lose your sight, or how did you go blind? If that's the 100th time someone's asked you that day, or, you know, your temper your patience is going to run a little short. So
I try to laugh. I try these days especially to laugh off. But don't get me wrong, I know. I do know, because I was there many times.
Yeah.
Where I had to almost walk out, not in a car, because that's difficult, especially if you're on a highway or something, going at speed. Listen, I want to mention some other stories, because we've got HumanWare coming up. Big news today from HumanWare. A lot of people asking questions about issues they're having with the stream. Some new features coming to the Mantis Q40 are going to be discussed as well. So we're going to be joined by Matthew Paquette and Andrew Fladres from HumanWare a little bit later. But come on, a couple of other stories before that. Did you hear about OpenAI launching a read aloud feature?
Oh, no, I didn't. What? Go on.
Yeah, so this is on the app, right? So now you can kind of, I guess, what they've done with other apps as well. You know, basically, the responses can be read aloud if you choose them to be. Now, some people seem to be very excited about this. It's going to be available on the iOS and Android app. That enables chats to read aloud to users. It's also available on the web as well. And the idea here is that you can, you know, get your chats read back to you, which is kind of cool. I know, look, for those of us who use screen readers, that could get in the way, I think.
Yes. Anyone who's used Copilot on the iPhone, by the way, exactly that. It will start speaking its response to you, and then VoiceOver, about 30 seconds later, will start trying to read it out over the top of it. Annoying.
But as long as it's something that we can choose rather than, you know, if there's a button to say read aloud, then that's fine. But if it's just going to do it itself, I think it's actually a button you have to activate.
I'm confused. I'm confused. Is that different from the voice chat option then? So it's only reading aloud your typed questions. It's answers to your typed questions.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it's not like I was thinking the same thing because I thought, well, hang on, it already does this, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it will do that in chat mode. This is kind of allowing you to get read aloud within the responses of the text conversation specifically.
Okay. So screen reader users, kind of like, we don't care.
I don't care personally, no. I know some people are excited about it, and I think that's good for some people. I'm not going to ridicule it because I think it's a good idea.
Good for some people.
well, look, there's a lot of people. Someone got in touch the other day saying to me, you know, look, I would love to use something that reads the screen, but I don't want voiceover. I'm not at the level I need voiceover. I need something to speak the screen to me.
Yeah.
Now, this was via shortcut. Now, I want to mention this because it was someone who got in touch with me who asked this question. And basically, my suggestion was, if you go, and this is the first time I've ever done this, but if you go into the Shortcuts app, you can add, now, is that an action? Is that what they call it? Or a new shortcut? New shortcut. And then you go to, I just put in the search box, speak screen. And that came up as an option. And then you just basically enable that. And that's it. That's all you do. You just save the shortcut as speak screen. And then you can go to your action button settings, choose shortcut, and then pick speak screen. And then it means anytime you're on a website or you're on anything, frankly, that you want it read aloud to you, you can just tap that action button, actually hold it in for speak screen, and you would hold in the button for a couple of seconds and it will start reading the screen to you. And I think that's quite cool. A lot of people don't necessarily want voiceover, you know, and I think that's kind of what
that's
this
a
comes
very good
in.
Point.
That's what this is for.
Actually, I tend to get into the... Yeah, screen reader, how else do you use it? But there was many years where I was, you know, magnification and reading the odd bit, using a screen reader, turning narrator on for a second, maybe. Even using a screen reader with the mouse pointer to put the mouse pointer over some text, a paragraph of text, and getting it to read it to me.
I was talking to someone just yesterday who does that, who uses NVDA,
yeah,
but he uses the mouse. And it was funny, we were having that conversation. And you know that sometimes you kind of walk into these things and you go, oh, I shouldn't have said that. But I said to the guy, I'm like, so why don't you just switch off the whole thing and just use the screen reader completely? And he's like, oh. And you just know he's not ready yet, you know, and he's not there and it's going to take him some time and he'll just bump around until he gets to the point where he has to. And then, you know, I was like, okay, fair enough. I get that.
Yeah, exactly right.
It's funny. Isn't it funny sometimes how you forget where you were?
Yes, exactly. I've still got a monitor in front of me. Absolutely no use. I could just tell that it's on, maybe, but I still have it there. It's almost my comfort blanket. No use to me whatsoever.
Listen, more stories coming up. We'll get into those tomorrow, but I'm going to switch gears a minute because coming up next, we're going to hear from Humanware. They're joining us to talk all about some big updates to the Stream 3, which I know a lot of you have been having issues with. The big question about Audible will be answered, and updates to the Mantis Q40 and some other products as well. Stick around, just Double Tap.
Follow Double Tap on social media at Double Tap on Air and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts and email us feedback@doubletaponair.com. We'll be right back. Call the Double Tappers now, 1-877-803-4567, or email us, feedback@doubletaponair.com.
And time now to find out the very latest from Humanware. I caught up with Matthew Paquette and Andrew Flatres from Humanware to find out about some updates to their hardware. I want to start, though, if you don't mind, Matthew, with yourself and the Stream 3, which, of course, has been much anticipated and, of course, now much talked about in the community, as the Stream always is. Mm-hmm. A lot of people getting in touch with Double Tap to say, you know, hey, there's a few things we'd like to, you know, see updated, improved. Obviously, it's a brand new product. And one of the benefits of this product, I guess, is that you can provide software updates. So maybe if you don't mind telling us where we're at with sort of the product itself, how it's going, and any updates that are perhaps coming.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do have an update that's going to be coming in. We're shooting currently for end of April/early May. This is going to be a pretty big update. It's the community's been, you know, I read all the forums and the mailing lists and so on and so forth. And some of the users' community's biggest concerns are being addressed. So For example, something that I keep hearing is the order of the books on the bookshelves. So currently they're added as they're listed as they're being added to the bookshelf, which is okay if you've got like 10, 15 books, but if you have like 300-400 books, then it's not that useful. So we're going back to an alphabetical order. So books are going to be sorted in alphabetical order on every bookshelf, which is going to be a tremendous help for the user. And then we've also made a bunch of other improvements, such as the speed at which the SD cards load. So for people with big, big SD cards, like 512 gigs and even 1 terabyte SD cards with tons and tons of books, we've seen improvements of 3, 4, even 5 times faster sometimes in the loading of the SD cards. So that should be a tremendous help. And yeah, as you mentioned, it's a more modern platform. So that allows us to make software updates. And our goal is to push out at least 2 updates a year. So we're having one now and most probably one in the fall. And yeah, we will keep pushing out quality of life updates. And as people test out and find issues, we'll fix them and make it better.
And of course, last time we talked, one of the big announcements was TuneIn and your collaboration with TuneIn. That, I guess, progresses and more people can access podcasts and radio streams that way.
Yeah, absolutely. So TuneIn was very well received by the community. Most people were really happy to see it. It really does complement the internet radio feature that we already have in the podcast feature, because there are some that are exclusive to TuneIn. We will be bringing improvements to TuneIn as well with this new version. So for example, in the release version for podcasts, if you listen to half hour of a podcast, of a 2 hour long podcast, you couldn't resume at the same place. You had to go back to where you were before resuming. Now the podcasts will remember where you were before you stopped. So we're also bringing a few improvements like this. There's some radio stations also that don't work currently on TuneIn. For example, I'm thinking of Odyssey radio stations that don't work. We've put in some fixes into place and they should work now with the new version, but we still have to do a bit of testing. That's why we're not releasing now. But yeah, we're really happy with how TuneIn's turned out.
And talk me through this, because when I got the Victor Reader Stream 3, the thing I couldn't understand was why there was internet radio, podcasts, and then TuneIn could give me the same options. Is it a case that TuneIn will eventually replace the internet radio and podcasts functionality within the stream, or is it purely there to complement?
It's purely there to complement. We don't have any plans to phase out the current podcasts and the internet radio features, which is provided by Utunes. There's no plan of tuning them out, no pun intended. The goal is really to complement and to bring in more stuff. So there is content that is available only on TuneIn or only on Utunes. And also for the podcast, there's some stuff that's only on the podcasts provider we use, and some is only on TuneIn. And the goal is really to have them complement each other and enrich the offer. The goal is to add, not remove.
And of course, you do have a problem with content, don't you? Not you specifically, but you know there is a problem out there with content. Yes. That the more and more it diversifies, the more and more it becomes isolated inside its own world. It can be challenging to make sure you've got access on a device like the Stream 3 to everything. And I think about BBC, for example. Yeah. We get lots of people who get in touch and say, hey, I want to get all my BBC Sounds content on there. Is that something you're able to achieve with this new edition?
So with some of the stations, yes. With some of the stations, no. So for example, if I'll take a quick example, Radio France in France recently moved over to a new type of streaming technology. It was the same thing with the BBC. So for those, we look at what we can do. They're no longer available on Utunes, and sometimes they're not available on TuneIn. But when they're major providers like that, something like the BBC or CBC over here in Canada, we do try to get in touch with them and see, and with most of them, we explain to them what the situation is, that it's a dedicated device for blind users, and we need, you know, we can't use a web browser, it's got to be a C. So very often we're able to get arrangements with those companies, those providers, and get some sort of workaround so that we can keep having them. For example, for the BBC, it's in the Humanware playlist. The link changes daily, but we do have something running on our servers that updates the list automatically, so that there's a little bit of magic behind the scenes so that the end user doesn't, you know, see any interruption.
Okay, so you're able to, and you are working with CBC, BBC. I mean, you're saying those conversations are possible.
They are
happening as well.
They are happening, correct.
Right, okay. And do you foresee a time when it would be possible to get BBC Sounds content? And I say that specifically because it's such a big provider of all kinds of podcast mm-hmm. and audio-specific content that people love around the world. Do you foresee a time where that could almost be an app, in quotes, on the stream?
It very well could be, yeah. We'd have to, you know, get in touch with the proper people. The thing that happens when you work with big organizations like that is we do have a couple of contacts at the streaming side of things. So the people who take care of the radio stations and then the people who take care of the BBC Sounds would be completely different people. But we can definitely try. And yeah, it is something that is, you know, possible in the future where I've also tried, because I haven't been successful yet, but I've tried to contact people at Spotify. I've tried to contact people at SiriusXM. I would love to get their services on the stream. We're having all those conversations. As I said before, the goal is to have more, not less, and the more services we can add. At the end of the day, if I could have Netflix on the stream one day to listen to audio descripted movie, I would love that.
Oh, that would be amazing. That would be so good. I mean, this is the point, right? That is what the stream's about. It's why I bought one. I mean, I'm an iPhone user. I love my iPhone. But, you know, I want a device that's dedicated to the job. And, you know, I want to listen to my audiobooks. I want to listen to my podcasts. I want a device that I can easily navigate around and I'm not getting endless notifications or spam emails or calls on, right? I just Absolutely. Want to get some peace and enjoy my content. And I mentioned audiobooks. The big question is Audible. Where are we with Audible? Because it was promised earlier in the year that it would be around, you know, the start of 2024, we'd see some improvement, some movement here so that Audible books could be made available on the Stream 3. Where are we?
So we've gotten great collaboration. I got to give props where props are due. We've gotten great collaboration from Audible in the past few months. They've been very responsive to emails. We have worked with them. They've sent us a beta version of the Audible Sync application. And we got to the point where we were able to read a book on a Stream 3 on a beta version of a Stream 3 software. However, there are a few bugs, a few issues that are showstoppers that are not. Like, for example, it only works with one specific account, which obviously is a pretty big showstopper. So we are communicating with them. Currently, the situation we're in right now, we're not sure if we're going to have it ready for the 1.3 update in April, May, that I mentioned before. With that being said, I would say right now it's about 50-50 that it's going to be there. If it's not, if we can't release it with the 1.3 version, what we're going to do is we're going to keep working with Audible. And if, it finally gets solved early June, then we're not going to wait until the fall to release it. We're just going to turn it on and release a 1.3.1 version type of thing. Because we know that the people are really waiting for Audible and we don't want to hold it. So as soon as it's ready, we want to have it out. Hopefully with 1.3, perhaps shortly after.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. People want this. I want it, right? I mean, I've got all my Audible books. I want to get them onto my Stream 3. So, yeah, this is something a lot of us are excited about getting. And those updates you're talking about, I know we very welcome. I do want to ask you one more issue. Well, not issue so much, but question, I guess, around the software. Is there any opportunity to add or change the voices that are actually built in? You've got two voices on there at the moment.
So, as I always like to say never. currently, we're pretty locked in with Acapella. We have two voices. That's the license agreement we have with Acapella. We have done an update recently. We added more voices, and we're hoping to add more in the future as well. But that being said, is there a possibility of eventually having something different on there? It's not impossible. No, I would say it is within the realm of possibilities. It's not in the short term, but it is something that we are always considering.
Andrew, I want to bring you in at this point. Matthew's had all those hard questions. Now we're on to you, Andrew.
No worries.
Well, look, first off, again, thank you for coming on to Double Tap and talking to us, because I just want to say, on a personal note, I did go out and buy the Mantis Q40. I wasn't going to. I had kind of told myself not to. My credit card had certainly told itself not to. But you know what? I kind of just felt the need for it. And I genuinely am enjoying it. I'm genuinely enjoying having the QWERTY keyboard experience, the 40-cell display. And, you know, I find, I don't know, just something's clicked. And I talked about this in the show. You know, I said something's really clicked with me in this particular device. And I don't know why that never happened before. But I think it's because I'm a QWERTY keyboard user. And having the Braille just complements it. And I even find I'm learning Braille better because I'm able to type something and then go, oh, that's what it is in grade two. Okay, right, cool. And yes. I'm kind of learning as I go. So it's almost like it's helping me at the same time, which is kind of cool. But you've got an update coming for the Mantis Q40.
Yes, we have. It's great to hear your feedback, Stephen. It's great to hear that you brought one. So yeah, thanks very much for that. And continue to enjoy that. So what's coming? So we have a version 2.2 that's around the corner, and this will be introduced on the Brilliant BIX series of Braille displays, the Mantis Q40, of course. And this kind of theme that we're introducing here is more of a simplicity theme. It's, you know, we have a lot of users out there that don't like to use all the bells and whistles that come with our hybrid Braille displays. Maybe because of other complexity issues, you know, they just want to use it as a dummy Braille display and nothing else. So What we're introducing is a new terminal only mode, which allows you just to remove all the applications and just allows you to simplify your connection between your host device, whether it be a computer or laptop or whether it will be your iPhone. So a really simple device just to use it as a Braille display only. And once you then start to maybe feel a bit more confident of wanting to explore the applications or the onboard applications, then of course you can then tether it back. You can switch it back to the standard mode. So that's kind of what we've been really focusing on this 2.2 version. But also we're introducing auto power off. And I love this feature, I have to say, because the amount of times that after I come back from a weekend and I've been asked a question on the Brilliant and I need to turn my Brilliant on or Mantis on and it's dead. And so I need to charge it up again, right? And I'm sure you've come across this as well, Stephen, that you've turned it off and it's, you then need to charge it up. And what's great about this is that you can set the auto power off to 1 hour, 2 hours, all the way up to 4 hours or never. And if it's not being used within that time frame, it will completely turn itself off. You will get a warning, just like you do with a television, where you get a warning if it's been on for so long. Do you want to cancel the turn off? Or if you don't acknowledge that, then it will just completely proceed with a shutdown. And it just preserves your battery life. And I have to say that is one of the small little features that I really do love, because it preserves your battery over the weekend and, of course, you know, optimizes your productivity. If you have got that on as well, and I'm sure people may be asking the question, well, what if I just walked away for an hour and I had a document that was opened? What would happen to my document? So we've introduced an auto save kind of to a temporary file. So in the event that that does happen, when you turn your device back on, you'll get prompted to say that there was a unsaved document. Do you want to open it or do you want to discard it? Of course, if you open it, you're there where you left off. If you discard it, then of course it's gone. So yeah, think twice before pressing your selection. So that's the second part of the 2.2. And then we've just introduced another library. So not for the Mantis, but for the BI20 and 40X. Our DAISY libraries at the moment are only audio supported. So we've added the new French audio library to complement all the other libraries that we have, like Bookshare, etc. And then we've had some fixes and improvements. And for the Mantis users out there, you'll probably benefit a lot more with this 2.2 because you'll see some additional changes. Things like you're able to customize your menu. So at the moment, Stephen, on your menu that you have a long list of applications. You're unable to hide those. But this new feature will allow you to hide those unused applications and customize it to your needs. And I think there's some additional options there as well, such as, I remember off the top of my head. LibLUI Braille Tables. So LibLUI Braille Tables have been updated to version 3.27. So if you are a LibLUI Braille user, then you can ensure that you'll be using one of the latest versions. And then just loads of fixes. Fixes to things like thumb key presses. There was an issue that was mentioned that if you press a thumb key, sometimes erratically is registered a double press. And so we've addressed that issue as well. So yeah, that's version 2.2.
That's brilliant. And that terminal mode you're talking about, it's interesting you bring that up because, especially as a feature update like this, because I know some people who've been a bit confused by using the method to switch devices. I haven't had that issue myself, if I'm honest. It seems pretty clear cut to me, but I think for some people it might be a little bit confusing because you're coming out and then in from, you know, into the editor, then back to the terminal and then back out. You know, you're kind of in and out a lot of the time and some people get a bit lost in there. And I was at the beginning, but I kind of figured it out. And I think just being able to turn it into a terminal device and just be able to simply switch from one device to the other, clearly, you know, others were having difficulty there and this will address that.
Exactly right. I mean, this requirement mainly come from our European friends. A lot of our European users really required just to have a Braille display as a Braille display. And so we needed to offer that as an option. We did attempt to improve this in the previous version of 2.1, where we added the additional simplicity of just plug and play. So as soon as you plug in your USB to your host device, it would recognize the screen reader and will then turn on terminal mode automatically. So that's, you know, again, we're slowly progressing to their to the requirements, but it still just didn't answer all the needs. So we've gone kind of full out on this version and decided that we'll make it in a different kind of mode. To access the mode, you would need to go into the diagnostic menus. And then you'll change it from there. So it needs to restart and then it goes into the terminal only state.
Very interesting. Okay, so let's talk about Monarch, because that's a product which is getting a lot of attention, I imagine, as we move towards CSUN and we have other events coming up this year around the world, different technology events where a lot of this technology is on show. The Monarch is going to be one, as it was last year, a very prominent feature. So how's development going there?
Development's going really well, I have to say. We're just about to complete our version 1 scope, and that should be available at the end of March. And we've already got about 200 Monarchs flying around the world, believe it or not, which is scary. So we've obviously ATIA, we did our first training event. So APH, they conducted a training session where they invited loads of teachers of the visually impaired over, and they were able to learn and master the Monarch. And then afterwards, they got the reward, and then of course they got away with a Monarch, thanks to APH and the government funding over there. Unfortunately, HumanWare can't do the same. We are not a non-profit organization, but we'll be doing similar things. We will be performing a in-person training event, and that's our next event. So after CSUN, we will be sending out invitations across the UK and across Canada, asking for invitations for teachers to join us in a training session, an in-person training session. So myself and some colleagues, we are going on the road in the UK and Canada, from Glasgow to Southwest, you name it, we're covering all over, and we'll be sending out dates. So please make sure that you can get yourself booked up on those, because I'm sure they'll get booked very quickly. But yeah, really well. Version one, as I said, we've introduced the math capabilities, or maths, as I like to call it, and we call it here in the UK is maps, but in the US is maps.
Got to get it right, yeah, come on.
Always confuses me, you know. So yeah, we've included some maths work here. So we're able to utilize Desmos. Desmos is the graphing calculator API that we're using, and we're able to create real-time graphs, actually fill the graphs, and point into wherever any cross-sections are happening and get the coordinates of where they're intersecting. So yeah, it's come a long, long way since we first started, of course. So we've still got some work to do, but we are making good headway.
That's amazing. And tell us about Annie, because last time we spoke, of course, we were talking about Annie and this amazing Braille teaching tool. You've got some updates for us on that as well.
Yes. So we are just waiting to expect our first shipment of Annie, and we are hoping that we will start to launch around end of March is my anticipation. End of March, we'll probably likely to start shipping Annie. We have been around to schools showcasing Annie, and the feedback's been fantastic from both students and teachers, and even parents for that matter. People have really seen the value of what Annie can bring, and I'm really excited to get this out the door, to really get in the hands of young students who kind of need to start learning Braille early, and of course giving some time back to teachers, right? Because they need a lot of time back. They haven't got a lot of time on their hands. So I'm sure Annie will at least help them a little bit.
And I know that Annie is obviously not for I suppose a consumer could buy Annie, but this is about education. This is about children learning at school. And the reason I bring this up, as my listeners will know, I am very much of the camp that any child who is low vision or blind, obviously, but especially low vision children should learn Braille. And I still get emails today from people telling me that there are just not those options are just not available to their children who are low vision because they may have enough vision to get on. And it's something that I am very strong on, that all children who are low vision must learn it, because I think it's a tool in the toolbox for later in life. And you may need it, you may not need it, but I think it's you can't predict the future. And I know this from my own point of view. And here I am at the age of 42, you know, not reading anywhere near as fast as I would like to with Braille. But had I learned it at school, yes, okay, I might not have used it in the first 10 years or so, but at least I had the skill. And thankfully, and the thing for me is I know this because I learned grade one at school. And when I went back to learning Braille later in life, grade one came flooding back to me in almost seconds. As soon as I put my finger on the dots, I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I remember this. And that's, I think, really important. So if devices like this can allow children to get more access to learning Braille, then the better, I say. I know you echo that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think you've really got that correct there, because, you know, there is that gap where a visually impaired that may go blind at a later stage who needs to learn Braille. How can they get engaged in learning Braille? That's the big question point. And I think really Annie, being it as fun as it is, kind of allows you to learn Braille without knowing you're learning Braille. That makes sense? Mm-hmm. Because it's an engaging product, and it's all about collecting stars as well, and you get awards. You can play against other components. So you can play against your other classmates, whoever maybe Braille users themselves or maybe non-Braille users. And it you know, really can kind of get people together to start learning Braille, even though you may not want to learn Braille. So yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing some stories from classroom teachers about the journey that students go on and what Annie happens in the classroom, whether non-Braille users start to use it just to play some games and maybe learn Braille themselves. So yeah.
Matthew, one other category we must pick up on, and that is, as well as audio assistance, actual navigation assistance, and Stellar yes. Trek, of course, is a perfect example of that. So you've got some updates coming, I believe, for Stellar Trek this year as well.
Yeah, correct. So we actually have an update coming on the week of March 11th. So we are adding a really cool new feature, which is called pedestrian crossing detection. And the reason for my hesitation here is that when we started doing this, we called it crosswalks. And then we had some testers from a little bit around the world, like especially in Australia, saying, what's a crosswalk? So we found out that, you know, crosswalks are not an international term. And we settled on pedestrian crossing detection. So basically, the purpose of this feature is to help the user, when you come across an intersection, to help you find where the lines on the ground are. So a visual traveler will be able to easily find on the ground where the lines are and when they can safely cross the street. So the Stellar Trek will now be able to find those lines. And not only that, but help you cross them in a straight line. So if you start crossing the street using the pedestrian crossing, and we know that some blind people tend to veer to the left or veer to the right, then the device is going to course correct you. It's going to tell you to, you know, steer a little bit to the left or to the right. So it is a really cool and exciting new feature that we're going to have on next week's update. We also have a couple of other updates. The ability to install maps offline, for example, is one that was very much requested by some institutions like schools and whatnot that can sometimes not use Wi-Fi and so on. But yeah, it is a pretty exciting new update. And then we are working on some more stuff for later this year, potentially for the fall once again. But we are working on a couple things there that I can't talk about right now, but will be pretty exciting.
Well, we look forward to getting you back on, both of you, to talk about all these products, because it's so interesting. And I think this is the world, the exciting world we live in now, is that, you know, you buy a product and it's no longer you get excited for the product and that's it. You get more product out of it because yes, more things come down the line and more toys get added to it all the time, which is fantastic. So I just want to thank you both for coming on, and also to you, Matthew, in particular, for being so honest about the stream situation, what's going on with Audible, and we look forward to this update, whether it's the new update that's coming out or, you know, whether it's a subsequent update soon after. But I know lots of people will be excited to hear the news that it's on the way, hopefully very soon.
Yes, hopefully.
Guys, thank you so much for coming on to Double Tap. Great to have you back on.
All right, thanks for inviting us.
Thanks, Stephen.
So there you go. Interesting to hear your take on all of that. Big news from Audible, of course. Big news around the Mantis Q40 updates. What do you think about all of that? Get in touch. Feedback at doubletaponair.com. You can call us and leave a voicemail, 1-877-803-4567. And of course, you can find us across social media as well. Don't forget, loads of content exists on YouTube as well. Catch up with our conversation with Hector Minto, talking all about Ability Summit and even more as our conversations continue on YouTube. Most recently, of course, our chat about accessible showering with Myra UK and RNIB joining us as well. So yeah, all that on YouTube. Just search for Double Tap Video on YouTube, or find the link on our website, doubletaponair.com, which you'll find all of our videos, our audio, and all our stories we cover here on the show. Sean and I back tomorrow. Have a great day.
Join us weekly for The Pulse with host Joita Gupta, who brings us closer to issues impacting the disability community across Canada. Watch The Pulse on YouTube or listen wherever you download your AMI podcasts.